Good morning, everyone. Can you hear me? So the title of this presentation is When Big Data Was Small, and I have to say that I actually loved the title of Dick Kramer's book so much, which had the same name, that I had to use it for the presentation. So essentially, this presentation grew out of work done by the Sabre Oral History Committee, and essentially, they're going and interviewing players, managers, and this is the first time that they've interviewed statisticians, right, sabermetricians for the project. And we ended up interviewing the following initial folks. I know there's a lot more people that have been involved in sabermetrics and developing it, but, you know, I only have 20 minutes to talk, so I couldn't keep expanding the number of people to do these people any justice. But we'll talk more about kind of what they did. And what's interesting is that, you know, you've got to be very careful when you do these interviews. Everybody has their own individual life with their individual story, so it's a little bit tricky to kind of tie it all together and call somebody like a sabermetrician or... But there is like a common theme that kind of runs through their decades of work, and we'll talk about that. And essentially, it's a story about how they spent years of their lives putting together the information that we need in order to even have a field called sports analytics or sabermetrics. And I'll explain what that means in a minute. So here's a question for the audience, and that is, you know, sabermetrics started in the late 1970s, in the 80s, but what did sabermetrics need in order to develop? So you could just raise your hand or shout out.
A slide rule.
A slide rule? Calculators? Data is the correct answer. You can't use a slide rule, you can't use a calculator, you can't use a computer without the data. So
actually, you need accurate data.
Exactly, which takes a long time to collect and look through, right? So so why is it called When Big Data Was Small? Because, you know, back in the 1970s, baseball data was small, right? Where could you find it? You could find it in a newspaper. You know, there's a box score. People talk about the game. You could go to the back of a baseball card, which I think, you know, a lot of people did when they were kids, right? They would compare stats of players. Or, you know, there were baseball encyclopedias, which, you know, fewer people had access to. They were kind of expensive at the time. But the problem with all this data is that there's not that much information. And these folks kind of looked at the world of baseball information and said, look, we got to do better. We got to get more information. We've got to collect it. We've got to use computers. We've got to digitize it. And we've got to democratize it so that the fans have access to this, right? So this is essentially the common thread that's running through their story. And here's a graph of, you know, the growth in baseball data. And this is true of any sport. I teach at NYU in the sports department. And, you know, the common theme is essentially an explosion of sports data across every sport. And you could see that, you know, even through the 1980s, there's very little uptake in the sports data. And it's only, you know, more recently, when you have video data, you have PitchFX, you have all sorts of information coming in, that it's really, really starting to explode. But the only way that that could even happen is if you had that kind of fundamental play-by-play game data, you know, batted ball data, pitch type, all these type of things that we're used to today, that didn't exist back then. And somebody had to use a new thing called the internet and program this up in order for fans and teams to have access to it. So the story kind of starts, you know, with these folks, with David Neft, and essentially he was working at a publisher at the time, and he ended up traveling down, and all these stories are online in Sabre's website. These were interviews conducted with these folks, and this is just kind of a quick summary. But if you go to Sabre's website, he has a, you know, much more rich story. But essentially what he did was he went down to Philadelphia for a work project, and he saw that TV Guide was using a new system from IBM in order to automate the publishing of their TV schedules. Actually, back then, there's a little photo on the top. People had to manually typeset a printer. You know, each little, letter block by block. So this was an extremely expensive process. So David, you know, essentially explained that this was the biggest barrier to the dissemination of baseball data. It was too expensive every year to update an encyclopedia, to have every player's data, to have every single manually typeset thing in order to publish the book. But he saw that IBM created this new thing called a database, and you could store information in a database, and it had like a key and a value, and you could look it up and just update the little fields, and that's how TV Guide was publishing their guide. So then he said, you know what, let's make a baseball book. Now it's actually commercially possible to do this, and it ended up being, it was the Baseball Encyclopedia, published in 1969. It had 2,300 pages of six-point type. He had more than 30 people working on the project, and this involved MLB as well because they had to go through baseball data and reconcile it. They had to make it accurate, as somebody said in the audience. They had to clean it. They had to fill in the gaps. So they had 30 people going around the country looking at old newspapers and filling in those gaps. And in the end, MLB had a little panel set up, and they would arbitrate, you know, inconsistencies and decide what the official record was. But this book was a blockbuster hit. It was the first, I think it was, he said it was the first book of any kind to be typeset electronically in the United States. Any book, right? TV Guide was doing it, but this was such a new technology. And it was pricey at the time, but it was such a hit that you could find it at Sears. You know, MLB teams were calling him up and asking him for custom prints for players that were retiring. You know, it was a very, very popular book. So that helped spread baseball data. The next step in this whole process is, how do you take these MLB stats and then digitize it? And there were a few folks like, you know, Dick Kramer, Pete Palmer, who were rare in the baseball world in the sense that they had access to computers and could program. And, you know, there was a presentation yesterday that was talking about the 1960s IBM punch card computer. That cost over $1 million. You know, there were only a select group of people in the world that had access to these computers. They were so expensive. And Dick Kramer and Pete Palmer had access. Dick was at Harvard. You know, he was doing his research there and related to work on a Nobel Prize that a professor there ended up winning. And in the spare time, if there was some downtime in the computers, he might be tinkering with it and using baseball data. Pete Palmer was working for Raytheon in the Alaska radar, I think, missile defense system. And so he had a Defense Department computer that had some downtime. Hopefully the country was still protected when he was running these baseball simulations. But he would tinker. He would digitize baseball data. He would run simulations. Both of these guys would test theories like, you know, is there really clutch hitting? They created new statistics by having these computers be able to crunch numbers in ways people couldn't do at home, such as, you know, what became OPS, right? So these folks were very, very special in the time that they had access to computers before there was a personal computer. And at the same time, you know, in 1975, the Statistical Analysis Research Committee was formed in Sabre. In the interviews, I think Bill James said, you know, back then, you can go to a Sabre convention, and everybody interested in baseball analytics could fit into a hotel room, right, in the world, right? So it was a group of people, Pete Palmer, Bill James, and Dick Kramer were, you know, the main cast of characters. But instead of working in isolation, they could meet each other at Sabre conferences, exchange ideas, you know, publish things. Although, you know, I was told that, you know, baseball statistics were kind of looked down upon, this kind of sabermetrics work. So there was a quota. I think only one publication a year on baseball stats was allowed in the Sabre publication. Every other year. Oh, sorry, Dick. Yeah, so every other year you could see one article about baseball analytics. And then there's also a story about how statistics was starting to develop at MLB teams, like statisticians. And I interviewed Steve Mann, who is widely known as perhaps the first sabermetrician or statistician to work at a baseball team. And I think it was in 1979, 1980, he was the assistant GM of the Houston Astros. And what he found was the problem was there was not enough data to actually solve practical problems that teams had. Teams had their own play-by-play data, but they didn't have any other team's data, right? It's almost like these closely guarded secrets. So Pete Palmer introduced Steve Mann to Dick Kramer, and they proposed and planned to dramatically expand MLB data by collecting play-by-play data. Of course, this would need some new technologies in order to do this. And here's the Apple IIe. I don't know how many people remember that computer. But Kramer in the early 80s developed a system called Edge 1000. It's a play-by-play system that charted batted balls, and it was used by the A's manager, Boris, and among other people. And it was used to generate like statistical notes for announcers, such as lefty-righty splits and things like that. Palmer and Mann also developed a play-by-play system that was separate from this for the Phillies and the Braves. And Joe Torre and Bob Gibson really liked the strike zone and batted ball data from the system. So they were big early fans of this. At the same time, these previous projects were kind of commercial projects, and they were for teams, right? They weren't publicly available. But some folks such as Bill James and Gary Gillette, John DeWan, eventually got together to do, and many, probably some people in this room too, many Sabre volunteers, got together to do something called Project Scoresheet, and that was essentially a volunteer network to go around the country and to get the play-by-play data. I guess the purpose of this was essentially to help publish more books, like the Bill James books, and the data was used for baseball research, right? So there's like a almost like a saber like fan movement to get more data, and then there's kind of a computerized movement for the teams to get more data. And part of this was Stats Inc., which Dick Kramer had already started Stats, and then John DeWan and Bill James kind of joined Stats Inc. in order to use computers for this play-by-play data to, among other things, like create box scores for USA Today. It was much cheaper if you could generate with a computer program the box score for publication. The stats were used by announcers such as Vin Scully, and these stats were essentially, I think Dick told me it was just stats that they thought were interesting, to announcers. They essentially kind of had available stats that weren't available before, such as ground ball, fly ball data, individual batter splits, and one big one was that no one before had looked at the count and then be able to say, oh, in this count, what's the batter's, batting average? If there were two strikes and no balls, right, now we all know, this batter's in trouble, right? But back then, that was the first time these kind of stats were being used on air. Stats Inc. also created, Bill James fantasy baseball for fans, using a lot of using their data, and they also created the first live update on the internet for baseball scores, play-by-play data, right? So an AOL baseball site was actually one of their most popular sites. Had this, what we're used to today, right? Every fan is used to seeing that game day data. But the thing is, this was extremely hard work at the time because the internet was so new. It was so difficult to program. So people like Dick Kramer, spent years of, learning the newest technologies, the newest programming languages, using the latest computer to make these things happen for teams and fans. So with Project Scoresheet kind of lingering a bit, there was a movement started by Dave Smith called Retro Sheet that essentially was an all-volunteer organization. It was almost like a backlash against the commercialization of baseball data, where it was just, you know, a lot of Sabre volunteers, baseball fans would get together to create a historical data set of play-by-play information. And historical is different in the sense that, you know, teams wanted the latest information about their opponents, you know, like what's happening in the next game. They weren't so, you know, much interested in games from the 1920s. So this is like a very different project to kind of create the entire universe of baseball statistics through the decades that we're used to today as fans. I mean, I remember the first time I went online and said, oh, let me go work, program with some, and do some statistics with baseball data, and I Googled and found RetroSheet. I was like, oh my God, I can't believe this exists. It's amazing that, you know, the amount of information that goes back through the years. So the way that they would do this is, you know, the first step is they went to teams. They begged them for their historical play-by-play data. They said, hey, please give us all you have. But it only went back a certain number of years. So the volunteers then had to go to newspapers, right? And, you know, Henry Chadwick, you know, the famous baseball statistician, or the first one, I should say, you know, came up with a way to record the action of the game in statistics, you know, like the box score. So they went through old newspapers and would try to find descriptions of the games, decipher box scores. And I think Dick Kramer called it like, it's almost like a baseball Sudoku, where you're trying to fill in the gaps, you know, by logically looking at what else has happened in the newspaper and then coming up with the plausible stats of what happened in the game. The next step of all this was kind of like democratizing the MLB data. And, you know, there was RetroSheet to help with that and make it freely available to fans, but there was also Baseball Reference. And essentially, you know, Sean Forman in 2000, you know, he was inspired to kind of gather together data and publish it online because that's something he wanted to see as a fan. You know, before then, there was no sports database that, you know, was searchable, usable by fans. I mean, there were some sort of more primitive versions of it online, but this was the first time you could just go to a website, search any player, and instantly get their stats for free. And the data sources were RetroSheet and Total Baseball, which had a CD in it in the 90s. And, you know, John Thorne, Pete Palmer, Gary Gillette helped put that together. And the CD-ROM made it so that you could load it in your personal computer and kind of look up the player stats. But Sean Forman, you know, he was saying that he should have been working on his PhD thesis, but, you know, he just really had to code this new website. He took that CD and helped make it into that website that we call Baseball Reference. And now, you know, Sports Reference is viewed by over a billion times a month by sports fans, right? And it's almost like the world we have today, we're just so used to, but it required a lot of work. You know, Sean Forman, you know, basically relied on the work of many, many volunteers, you know, companies that helped put together this data before it could become freely available for fans. So the stories of these folks, you know, I can't really do it justice and really mention their full stories. I mean, there's several hours of stories on Sabre's website. We're essentially, you know, a story of blood, sweat, and tears over the years, like solving problems, seeing problems, solving problems, and then sharing the solutions with others. And, you know, this data that they put together, their stats, what we call sabermetrics, was essentially a proof of concept that sports analytics works, right? So then after their efforts in baseball, it quickly spread to other sports around the globe. And, you know, I got involved with the Sabre Oral History Collection because, you know, a friend of mine was on the committee or head of it. I encourage you, like, if you have any free time to think about, like, volunteering. There are so many players out there, former players, that you could interview. You could help transcribe existing interviews. But it's been a very rewarding project. So if please go to Sabre's website if you're interested in, and there's contact information of how you can get involved. And that's it. Does anybody have any questions? 5 minutes. Oh, sorry. So I guess it's 8 a.m. Nobody wants to go to the mic, right? They want to sit down. No, it's okay. I think you mentioned, like, in the interviews, like, especially, like, the telecommunications was especially tricky with the early internet. And even when you had these computers, I think you mentioned, too, another limitation was you could not real-time compute, like, update stats with the play-by-play initially. You had to wait till the end of the game to kind of run it, and then you get the latest stats overnight. There's a lot of advanced computing for the time. Do you have a question? Yeah, I mean, you probably know this, but like, you know, AI machine learning, that's a specialty for unstructured data. You know, it can, computer vision can easily, well, not easily, but you can go through it and essentially structure the unstructured data. Or it can find patterns in the data. And then, so that's a very promising, I teach AI and ML at NYU, so that's a very promising field and an exploding field. Yeah. And it's a problem, like you said, which is a video data. It's not like a data table. You know, so by structured data, he means like, you know, a data table with column names and, you know, observations. Like a video right here is just pixels, right? It's like thousands of pixels, like, what, you know, every second, so or half a second, like, what do you do with that information? That's where AI is helping teams today. Well, you know, I work across different sports, and I have to say that baseball gets an A+. You know, because of a lot of the people in this room, right? Sabre, and, you know, there was a constant movement in the beginning to make it free and available and to fans. If you go and try to find European football data, it's paywalls, right? Like, you're going to have to spend thousands of dollars a year to a special company that has this information. So America has kind of a tradition, and Sean Foreman helped with this too, with, you know, basketball reference, football reference, you know, hockey reference, of, like, free data that doesn't actually exist in many other, in most countries of the world, right? So in America, it's great. In other countries, it's a pretty bad state. Oh, that's it? Oh, sorry. That's all the time. Thank you.